It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
All right, fans, we're pleased to be joined by the one and only Dan Bylsma, head coach of the Coachella Valley Firebirds, coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins from 2008-2014, won a Stanley Cup in 2009, a Jack Adams Trophy to boot in 2011, went on to coach the Sabres, Detroit Red Wings a bit as an assistant, coached the Olympics for United States in 2014. Without further ado, Dan Bylsma. Dan, how are we doing today?
We're doing great. We're doing great. Thanks for the introduction.
Absolutely, no problem. So just a quick softball to start things out. What's it like to wear flip-flops at the rink?
That's one of my favorite things about hockey. I've had a chance to do it in California for 10 years or so, and Phoenix for a couple years. I'm an open-toed shoes kind of player and coach. So it's good to – not quite there yet, but it's good to – feel we're going to go to the warmth and have that opportunity
for sure. So, you know, starting an AHL team from scratch as you guys are, that's obviously a unique experience. There's not a lot of Seattle prospects, if you will. What's that sort of been like from the ground up, getting this group together and, you know, assembling it from pretty much nothing?
Yeah, that's really, you know, it's not new to kind of get a new group of guys every year in the American Hockey League and build a team from the, you know, ground up, so to speak. But what I think is unique and what is new for the Seattle organization is 2 years old. We've only had two drafts, and that means we don't have a lot of young players. We don't have a lot of development players in the system. So we're building a team in Coachella. You're doing it a couple different ways that are unique. You're getting some free agents from other teams, getting free agents in their career, and we've got five or six guys that were in the expansion draft as a part of the expansion draft at Seattle 2 years ago, Alexander True and Cole Lind and Max McCormick. Gustav Olofsson, guys that the Seattle picked up 2 years ago that are a big part of the team in Coachella.
What intrigued you about this job and this opportunity?
Well, I think I have a ton of passion for getting with the guys, having the energy to get with them in their career path and developing them as people and as players. And even last year, getting the chance in Charlotte, splitting the year with Seattle and Florida there was a chance to get these guys are on the beginning of their careers. They're on their development stage of their careers. And there's a lot of excitement and a lot of joy, frankly, of getting with the guys and developing them in their careers and getting them to the next level where they want to go.
From what I can see, your home opener isn't until December 18th, right?
December 18th is the home opener in the building in Coachella, yes.
So from now until then, like, what's that kind of been like? I know obviously you're not on the road for the entirety of this. You're obviously coming back at certain points, but what's kind of this transition phase like, given that you're on the road for huge, you know, stretches at a time?
Yeah, I think the challenge really comes when November 6th we head to Coachella to the desert for the first time. We haven't been there yet. We don't know it. Right now for us and the guys and the team, Seattle's home and Seattle's our home base, and that's where we've been for the last 2.5 months or 2 months, so to speak. So we've been on the road to Calgary to play our first games 1 and 2, but we're coming back home to Seattle to get back at it. And we've played some home games here in Seattle. But down the road, we're going to be, you know, in the next couple weekends, we'll be playing some more games. We'll be heading to Coachella and then we will be home. And we're going to be on the road playing road games for another you know, month and a half or 5 weeks, so to speak. So I'm really the guys right now, like we've dug in, we've considered this home. We're playing out of Seattle and that's where we're practicing. I'm the challenge for us is we're going to get to Coachella for the first time, not back to, but we're going to get there and still be on the road playing road games for another 5 weeks. So that one is the mentality of our team and where we're at is going to change a little bit once we get to Coachella.
Logistics wise though. So if you guys are in Seattle, is your whole group in a hotel and then you're going to transition to like, do players have places lined up in Coachella? Like that's a really, you know, unique kind of situation there.
It is. Like we've starting the summertime, Troy Bodie and the staff for the Firebirds have started to arrange potential places to stay and live in Coachella. And once camp broke and we got our team, the guys have had the opportunity to get a place right now in Coachella, sight unseen. We've helped them out in that regard. As far as us here, there's a majority of us are in the hotel, living under one roof right now. There are a few guys that, got a rental apartment, Airbnb for a month and a half and kind of have a place here as well. And then we'll be transitioning once, you know, we're going to play the games at Abbotsford on the 3rd and 4th. And we're going to fly to Coachella as a team from Seattle to the valley, to the desert. And hopefully all of us have places to call home when we make that trip.
Last year you were in Charlotte, representative for the Kraken in a way. And you had an opportunity to be part of it. It was essentially a dual affiliation and to work with Jordy Kier. Kind of what was that whole experience like, being able to, test drive, for eventually what might come down the road this year?
Yeah, I think, it was one experience that I think you went into with a little trepidation of mm-hmm. dual affiliate and Seattle and the Panthers, Florida. They're having half the team. We had half the guys. They play a different way. We play a different way. Mm-hmm. How are we going to come together and develop as a team? And I thought Jordy Kinnear and the Florida Panthers, they did an amazing job of welcoming us in. We did an amazing job of kind of combining the group to become one. And there was some fortunate, Florida wanted us to play a certain way in terms of D-zone coverage and a few system things. And it coincided with how Seattle plays. Mm-hmm. And how they're trying to do things. So from a development standpoint, from our players, we were on the same page in that regard. And I said, coaching with Jordy, I had played with Jordy for 3 games a long, long time ago. Neither of us probably remembered it very well. So we were coming together as a staff for the first time. And Jordy did a great job of welcoming us in and developing our guys along with their guys as one unit.
You know, it's close to 15 years since you've been a head coach in the AHL. What are the biggest differences from back when you were running Wilkes-Barre Scranton to today in terms of what it's like to be in that role?
Well, it frankly brings back a lot of memory. It hasn't been a long time. That was I was in Wilkes-Barre for 2 years as an assistant. And then the 08-09 season started as the head coach. That was my first head coaching experience in Wilkes-Barre. I think you don't know what it's like to be a head coach until you become a head coach, and you don't have head coaching experience until you get it. And that's a pretty overwhelming kind of task to have. And that's what I remember about my experience in Wilkes-Barre that first year as a head coach is, they're all looking to you to be the leader of the team and the point in the right direction. And that's what I kind of feel like now with this new experience is it's been a while since I've been a head coach. And this is an opportunity to be a head coach again, but it also comes with, I get that same kind of feeling deer in the headlights, feeling a little bit of now they're all looking to you And now they're all, you're the guy leading the direction. And except that, that's an energizing thing to me. Like it's a great feeling as a person and as a coach. You get to lead these guys and you get to develop these guys in a direction they want. You know, they're trying to get to the National Hockey League. We're all trying to get to the National Hockey League in this league. And they're energetic and passionate about getting better and learning to get better. And that's been a great thing about this opportunity and being a head coach for these guys.
Having had the NHL experience that you've had now coming back, what do you think you've brought back with you in terms of knowledge and just ideas that maybe you didn't have that first time around in Wilkes-Barre?
Well, shoot, the first time in Wilkes-Barre, I kind of thought I had all the answers going into being a head coach. You learn pretty quickly that, like, you don't have all the answers. If you think you do, you're wrong. And you're trying to get in with the guys and come up with the answers in terms of developing the team and them as players. And that's what I'm excited about getting back to being a head coach again. Like I feel like a little bit as I went along in the National Hockey League as a coach, I lost that passion and that energy to get with the players and develop the players and develop the team. And I that's kind of what I'm super, super excited about this opportunity is that opportunity to get back with the players, get them on their path and developing the players and the team to where we want to go.
At this level, you have the prospects who are coming in 20, 21 years old, and they're kind of eager and ready to go. And then you have sometimes those guys in the middle, the 25, 26, maybe who've been kicked around a little bit in the business, and they kind of bring some baggage with them. How do you manage those guys and all the different stages of careers that players are in at this level?
Well, the American League brings a couple different life experiences for the mm-hmm. players. You mentioned the young players that are just starting their pro career that are, you know, kind of have the eyes on the NHL and mm-hmm. development to the NHL. And we have Ty Carte and Riker Evans and that are in that type of experience. But in the situation we're in with, not having a lot of developmental players, not a lot mm-hmm. of draft picks yet coming to the minor league team, we have some older guys as well, but the older guys still have the goal and the dream to play mm-hmm. in the National Hockey League. And I think that's what's important about the guys we got is that they still have that burning desire. And everyone's path is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. You know, myself, I played in the East Coast League for a year and a half, and I made it to the American Hockey League and the IHL for two more years. And I was 25, 26 before I played my first games in the National Hockey League. And I was made it to the National Hockey League as a full-timer when I was 26, 27 years old. So it's a little bit different for every one of the guys. Mm-hmm. But the good thing is we have guys that, regardless of whether they're in their first year pro, whether they're development players or whether they're – maybe a little older guys that have been around, so to speak, they still have the burning desire to try to get to the National Hockey League.
You know, obviously it's well known that Seattle, you know, the original architects of the Kraken as they were getting ready for the expansion draft relied a lot on analytics. In terms of your process, whether it's tactics, player evaluation, player development, is that something that's integrated into your job more frequently, I'm sure, than before, but even at all?
I think, you know, I don't want to say, I've been coaching now for 19 years. That's something that's evolved really over the course of those 19 years. I have been involved with the good and the bad of that, where we're trying to measure the game and different metrics, shot totals, shot location, and certain analytics of the game, but they've unequivocally been a part of the development process now too in the game is using where the analytics are, show your team is playing, where people are playing, how they're playing, and using that as a kind of a an indicator or a direction as to where we want to play and how you want to play as individuals. So, you know, I've had a lot of discussions already this year in analytics with the analytics staff we have with the Kraken. They've got a ton of great information, and I've already used it and tried to apply it to how we're coaching the guys and how we're coaching the team.
You mentioned how there's been,
by the way, don't tell them that I said that though.
We won't. No worries. We're you know, on the internet. Yeah. No one checks it. Yeah. So, you know, obviously you said you've been around the good and the bad of it, you know, and I know you didn't love the way you phrased it there, but there's obviously a process with getting familiar with it. Were you receptive in the heyday or the original, like the first time somebody either gave you a spreadsheet or some sort of information with shot attempts or whatnot? Were you receptive to that sort of discourse, or did it take you a bit to really, you know, be responsible, like work with it?
Yeah. I think the difficult part about analytics with the game of hockey is that it's such a free flowing game. It's not a stagnant game, and there's not a stagnant events that happen in game. There's not a first pitch fastball that happens on the first pitch. There's not a second pitch. It is a free flowing and ever flowing game. And the analytics community and the smart guys analyzing the game were trying to break down the game and analyze the game. It's a free flowing game. And there's almost never the same thing that happens again. There's never a third down and four. There's always a little variation to the game of hockey and the flow of hockey and the bounce of the puck and where people are at and the speed of the game and the time on the clock. And so I think over the last, you know, 15 years, there's been we've kept trying to get better at that analyzing of the game and the information that is we're producing and what it says. And so I think it's come a long, long way, you know, from the beginning, but there's always been trying to analyze the game and always trying to get information that you can help you coach your team and coach your players and see how they're playing and see how your team is playing. I think it's just gotten better and better, you know, over the last 10 years. And now, you know, now I think as coaches, we trust the analytics more now to help us coach the teams.
In the AHL, you know, 10, 15 years ago in the AHL, you know, if you had a video coach, you're kind of ahead of the game. And now everybody has it. They have goalie coaches. There's a lot more voices to manage as a head coach. How's that different now than when you started back then?
Well, I don't know if it's you have to manage more voices, but, you know, you said it perfectly when I got the first opportunity to coach in the American Hockey League 2004, 2005. It was a head coach and an assistant coach, and that was it. And looking back to my playing days in 1992 and 1994, we had a head coach and sometimes a part-time assistant guy who came and volunteered or helped out on home days. So in 2004, you know, the video was we were just getting video systems and you would record the game each period and the coaches were the video coaches. We broke down, you know, we had to plug in and we had to get everything set up and then we broke down the game after the game. So we were the video coaches. In Wilkes-Barre, we started to get a part-time video coach, finally came in, and that was at home games, and that was an intern, and then that turned into a full-time video coach. And, you know, that the game has evolved greatly since then, because now, you know, in our condensed office that we have here in Seattle right now, you know, we have Stu Bickle, assistant coach, and Jessica Campbell, assistant coach, and our video coach is still at work right over my shoulder here working, and we have a full-time goalie coach as well. So I feel like we have a staff that was bigger than the first staff I had in Pittsburgh at the time, but it's a great asset for the players. It's a great asset for the coaches to be able to get all the information and do everything we can to help the players develop and grow. And so it's not that hard managing them. Mm-hmm. It's hard getting good. It's, you know, you get good people and you get good coaches and you give them the tools and the assets. And it's great for the players to have this kind of coaching development for them.
All right. Well, Dan, thank you so much for joining us. You know, enjoy life in the hotel. Hopefully you can get into some sort of stable living soon and it all works out for you. But thanks, and hopefully we can talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Jacob. Thanks, Patrick.
Great. Thank you.
So, Dan Bylsma, batting cleanup. How about that, Pat?
A good start. A good start to the show. Really interesting guest. Obviously, with his background as an NHL head coach, an Olympic coach, Jack Adams winner, somebody that's been an assistant coach at both the NHL and the AHL levels. And now is almost trying to come full circle from where he started, back to the AHL, but back to a very different AHL from right. when he started. And he brings a very interesting perspective in the sense that he's worked with Crosby and Malkin and the stars of the NHL. And he's been able to see the game from all sorts of different vantage points. I think that it's a very unique perspective at this level to have somebody with that kind of insight. Somebody who's won a Jack Adams, only the second coach ever to win a Jack Adams and then come back to the American Hockey League. Tom Watt back in the 90s was the other one. So it's kind of a unique situation to start with. And now you have a coach like that in an even more unique situation with his team, essentially being based in a different city for 2.5 months, kind of living this very, travel oriented life. And now they're just trying to find their way as a team that's more or less a blank canvas. So it's a very, very unique situation in this league.
Absolutely. And we're hoping to touch on a couple more throughout the year on the Hockey News on the A podcast. I'm Jacob Stoller, obviously. Pat Williams joining me. We're really excited to get into more interviews like the one you saw with Dan Bylsma. A lot of good people in this league to talk to. And we're excited to, in addition to speaking about the prospects in the NHL, from NHL teams, talking to guys like Dan Bylsma. And, you know, if you have any suggestions, you can reach out to any of us on Twitter and whatnot. We'd love to make it happen. So one thing that we're going to be doing is throughout each episode and whatever, you know, we're on here, we'll have a prospect of the week. We'll discuss kind of some storylines that are, you know, happening, things that have to do with NHL teams and that sort of stuff. So, and along with, you know, evaluating certain teams' prospect pools. But to start for this week, this is a really interesting situation that, I'll be honest, I did not know was even happening until I read Pat's article. And that is Ty Smith, the mm-hmm. Devils' first-round pick from 2018 or 19, I can't, or might have been earlier, 22-year-old defenseman, who was part of the trade. The Devils traded him for and a third-round pick for John Marino. He was acquired by the Penguins, and he is now in the AHL. And he's played over 100 games in the NHL to boot, and now he's in the minors. Pat, you wrote an article where you spoke to Wilkes-Barre, you kind of went into a unique situation because, you know, he made the all-rookie team, right, in his first year. He had, like, 20-plus points in each season, very highly touted prospect who went from junior to the NHL and now is kind of, you know, going back down to the AHL to round out of his game. It's a weird situation. I'd be curious to know what you kind of garnered from your time speaking to everyone involved.
Yeah, some parallels almost to the Bylsma situation, a guy who had obviously some real success at the NHL level and is now finds himself back in the AHL trying to get back up to the NHL. And it's a very unique situation. I think more so even the fact that it's a defenseman. I think by far is the most difficult position to develop in this league. The American Hockey League really tests even. I've spoken to players that come down with NHL, 5-10 years of experience. Maybe they come down on a rehab assignment. They find that it's very difficult to play at this level because it's a lot more unpredictable. It's a lot more kind of guys running around trying to make an impact. So you have someone like Ty Smith who's really throughout his entire career has had nothing but success, going all the way back to junior with Spokane, first overall pick in the WHL draft, back-to-back WHL Defenseman of the Year, success with World Junior with Canada, and he comes right into the NHL, all-rookie everything seems like it's right on track. Right. 2 years later, here he is now. He's in the American Hockey League. You know, he just played a 3-3 weekend, kind of the classic introduction to the American Hockey League. And I think my takeaway from him is that he seems like he's on board with the plan. Now, I think it's easier when you look at that Pittsburgh roster and you, if you're being honest with yourself, there's not a whole lot of openings there.
Right.
You know, so I think he can get his head around that a lot better than perhaps if that wasn't the case. But it's definitely an adjustment mentally, also game wise as well. Like I said, it's sometimes a much different game at this level. And you know, the way guys come and go on the rosters, there's a lot less opportunity for cohesion. So it's going to test them a lot in that regard as well.
Yeah. I mean, I also think it's certainly a positive to hear that he's, you know, taking this the quote unquote right way, but he's played over 100 games in the NHL. This is a guy that's played with some of the world's best. You'd have to think that when Pittsburgh acquired him, they envisioned him being in their lineup this year. Maybe not, but I would tend to think that would be the case, especially when you're giving away a John Marino in that sort of deal. And to me, you know, it makes you wonder what the plan really is here, right? So if it's 20, 25 games, you have him there to shore up defensively, right? What does that look like? Because, and when I say that, I mean, is it, you know, below the hash mark? Is it one-on-one battles? Because it's got to be something small. The speed is a step below, you know, transition defense wise, you're not gaining much from that. Yeah. There's a lot more chaos. So, you know, I get the positive angle from it. I'm sure Pittsburgh's thrilled, you know, from an asset management standpoint that he's not sulking and freaking out. But, you know, you mentioned about unique how Bylsma is going back to the A. I looked through, you know, NHL all rookie teams and I couldn't go through every one, but I did not see anyone there that made it and not let alone wasn't a household name, but that ended up in the AHL. So yes, there's a lot of bodies in Pittsburgh, but you know, at what point here do you either move one out for him? Granted, if he's ready, if you think that that would have to happen, I think right away. Cause in my opinion, if it's a logjam issue, you got to fix that. Now, if it's not, and you actually think he needs to be in the AHL, you know, that's definitely, it's worrisome. You know, I checked in with a couple people on this, you know, that are in the league, working for teams and whatnot that have seen him. And the premise I heard was more the same of that New Jersey did not believe he was able to improve defensively. Yeah. And which, you know, would make sense. But I also think that a lot of people thought his production was kind of empty calorie, like how he was producing, even if it wasn't all in the power play, wasn't that amazing because his transition game wasn't great, exiting the zone as a puck count. There were certain question marks there that while he did get 20 plus points, maybe he was not as finished of a product as we thought. So it's weird. I've never, like, as I said, I've never seen something like this. I don't even know what to make of it.
Yeah, we don't. That's the complicated thing. We don't have a comparable here. We don't have something that we can say, all right, you know, a couple years ago, so-and-so went through the same experience and, you know.
Well, it's funny because I read something from a Penguins beat writer, I believe it was with The Athletic. I can't remember. Yeah, it was. And they had mentioned that when they did their, you know, season preview, like the roster, they kind of made it seem like the Ty Smith move was like just to get, because Pierre Olivier Joseph wasn't waiver exempt, like that kind of like more of like a paper move and that they would bring him back up. Now that that's not the case, yeah, it's really a unique situation.
Yeah, my sense is they wanted to work on his reads a lot in the defensive zone. And I you know, if I kind of extrapolate from that, it's this, the idea that if you can sort of manage the chaos and to read that chaos in the AHL, that when you come to the NHL, it's going to be, obviously it's a much more crisp, much more composed style of game, that the thinking goes, I think that you would be able to then make that transition pretty easy. Now that's there, you know, there's a lot of, you know, ifs in that, but you know, if that is the case, then I think then I think there's something to it. But there's no question. It's a strange situation. I remember when, you know, when that move finally did come down a couple of weeks back, I was like, wow, they went through with it. So I think, you know, the first couple of weeks are one thing in this league. Now I want to see you start getting into that November, December stretch. The games start piling up. Roster moves start happening. That's where I think you really start to test players at this level. And you see if they sink or swim. So
for sure,
you know, I don't think they necessarily care if he's down in the American League producing points. I think they want him, everything else without the puck is what they want him focusing on.
And hey, you know, maybe if the log jam loosens up a bit, one injury, he's back right up. And, you know, speaking of log jams, the LA Kings, okay, their prospect pool is rush hour traffic on the Gardner here in Toronto. I don't even know how they draft so well, and they had so many picks over the last couple of years because of, you know, their brief kind of retooling phase, that they have this plethora of prospects at the helm in Ontario. They're so deep that a guy like Jordan Spence, right shot defenseman, for my money, he is an NHL defenseman.
Yeah.
And I think he proved that last year. And, you know, there's other players that are, escaping me. Bjornfoot is also there as well. And, you know, LA has a real, real deep prospect pool. And what's interesting here, Pat, is they're kind of linked to the Jacob Chychrun sweepstakes in some degree. And, you know, there's definitely the ammunition on their end to sort of get that deal going. Durzi, Doughty, all these guys are kind of clogging up that right side. Brant Clark as well. And waiting in the wings are guys like Jordan Spence, Helge Granz, Samuel Fajimo. You know, those are big names there. Pat, from your vantage point, you know, of the guys I mentioned, Spence maybe to start here, what is his upside and what do you think LA could get out of him, whether it's there or, you know, he ends up going somewhere else?
First off, extremely smart. I talked to him, had some real couple extended discussions with him last year. And he's one of those people, when you speak to him, you can tell the light's on right off the bat. Just a smart person, I think, on and off the ice. I was surprised, and I wasn't. If this was any other NHL operation, I would think I'd be extremely surprised to see him back in the AHL. It's only because you mentioned that logjam that he is back in the AHL. And essentially, I think Jordan Spence is an NHL player now who's biding his time in the AHL, which that can be a tricky situation for players when they ready.
For sure. I mean, for him too, if you're looking at LA, and if he is in fact ready, the longer you've got him there, not only from, you know, what we're seeing with Jack Rathbone in Vancouver or Ville Heinola in Winnipeg, when you're kind of in that in between, you got the clock is ticking for LA with regards to that.
Yeah, and you just go up and down that line. If you have Kupari at 20th overall, you have Bjornfoot at 22nd overall, Kyle Thomas 51st, he's had a little bit of a slow start to his career, but I think he is starting to figure some things out. And Helge Granz, like you mentioned, 35th overall. I mean, up and down the lineup, they even brought in Elias Anderson, who's only 24. It seems like he's been around much longer, but he's 24, 7th overall pick by the Rangers when he came in. So they took him on as a little bit of a, you know, long-term project. But, you know, he's another one, right? Like, you know, he's down in Ontario. They have them working with Marco Sturm, a longtime NHL veteran. So I think that's going to be a different perspective as well. Like you said, with the Chychrun situation, LA has the assets. If they want to make that happen, if they want to really go for that move, you could dangle two or three of those guys, and you could still have a good pool of prospects even after that move.
Well, yeah, and there, everything with hockey at the professional level is circumstantial, right? Like someone that's a 6 or 7 on a different lineup could be a 4 or 5 on yours. Maybe not that big of a gap per se, as I just kind of mentioned, but a team could certainly look at a Jordan Spence, for example, and say, he could be our number 4, right? Like that. And for Arizona in that situation, I think that would make a lot of sense. Now, the question is, are any of these guys that we just mentioned sort of good enough to be the type of prospects that are cornerstones in a trade? So Peyton Krebs in the Eichel deal, right? Like leading up to it, he was the sticking point. That's who they wanted. That was the, it had to be him. So I wonder with any of these guys, are they sort of those big draws? I think Spence is going to be a good defenseman, but I think if anyone would be that person, it's going to be Helgi Granz. He's 19 years old, 6'4", I believe. He has that size, and also he's just getting comfortable with his body. Yeah. And I watched a lot of his clips, and what I find so interesting with him is he's just getting started. And he has the shot, he has the ability to really use his reach and weave through traffic offensively and then also defensively that, you know, give him a year or two in the A, this could be a really, really strong player. And he's overlooked because of what I mentioned in terms of circumstances. Like, LA has so many guys here, and one of them has to move. They have to get players out, or else they're not even do themselves any favors from an asset management standpoint. I wonder if a guy like Samuel Fujimo is looked at from Arizona. You know, a guy that's scored at every level. He's got a rifle of a shot. Mm-hmm. And with, like, when you have so many prospects in Ontario or at any AHL team, and you're at the point where you've got so many people that are of the same kind of age, people get left behind. And further to that, even your best guys, they're kind of shortened a bit as well because they're not getting as many reps as if they were sort of given all the attention. So it'll be interesting with LA, because last year it was there was a lot of people there, a lot of bodies. Yeah. And when you have, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, you never have too many, you know, valuable prospects. But I wonder if, from LA's vantage point, they start to wonder, okay, do we cut bait with a couple of these guys or sort of cash in when the value's high in some regard? Because as I said, they can't all stay there forever.
It's a good question too, right? And if you're LA, at some point you have to think, well, we have to take that next step now, right? Like,
right.
At what point are we kind of through that rebuild that we did, the post-cup rebuild?
Oh, they're through it. When you go and get Kevin Fiala, you're through it.
But while there's through it and then there's really through it where
you're
thinking now, okay, we're a team that can go 2-3 rounds deep into the playoffs. We can maybe compete for a cup, you know, beyond that. So while you still have Kopitar in your window, while you still have Doughty in your window. So it's that tricky situation where you want to kind of everything to hit at the right time, that young group to come up in time in order to be able to play while that older core is still able to be a high level, group of contributors. So, you know, it's a nice problem to have, but it's a challenge, I think, for that LA front office to try to manage all these different moving parts and get it right. I mean, you'd hate to not manage it correctly and maybe have prospects not meet their potential because, when I go through, the last 10, 15 years, I'd be hard pressed to find a better group of prospects on one AHL team than what I've seen with the Ontario Reign of the last couple of years. And this doesn't even count the fact that Byfield's up now.
Yeah.
Kaliev is up. I mean, these guys are graduates, Vilardi, right down the list.
But with that, Pat, the fear becomes you get rid of the wrong guy, right? You get rid of the player that could have, hit his sort of stride. And LA's situation is similar to the teams of like Ottawa and, Columbus, where our prospect of the week is. And what I mean by similar is, with regards to, you're kind of over the rebuild hump, but you're not fully out of it, right? You have a young roster, a plethora of guys, and there are player of the week, our prospect of the week, will you, is Kirill Marchenko of the Cleveland Monsters. This guy is going to be a player, folks. 7 points in 5 games so far with the Cleveland Monsters. And it's interesting, the 22-year-old right wing who was drafted by Columbus the second round of the 2018 draft, he was in the KHL the last 3 or 4 years with St. Petersburg. And last year, it got tough for him because I read an article of Aaron Portsline, also The Athletic. And he mentioned how when SKA came to Marchenko and asked him to re-sign a 3-year deal, he declined, obviously. And then there was a brief period he was sent down to the minors because of that. So he's had a different development route. But so far with Cleveland, this guy's looked like a player. You know, it's no wonder that Brad Larsen, Columbus head coach, said at training camp that cutting him was a tough thing to do. He has a goal scorer's touch, possesses a quick release, and with, you know, European players, you know, playing on a smaller ice surface, obviously something that is an adjustment and whatnot. And that's why it's even more encouraging that Marchenko has made a lot of plays in the slot. He's got good hands and tight. And at 6'3", I wouldn't say he's a power forward per se, maybe that you would traditionally think, but the way that he can possess the puck and control it and get that release off and separate himself from defenders, that's really where size has such a big value. And Marchenko has showed so far that, you know, the hype is real with a guy like him, and he's really on the cusp. I don't know how much longer he'll even be in the league, to be frank with you.
Yeah, and it's funny, we had that discussion. It was like, we better get to talk about this guy while he's still in the league, because you know, he's playing first line minutes in Cleveland with you know, good solid veteran like Brendan Gaunce.
Yeah,
Carson Meyer, another player that Columbus is high on, and it's a good group that they've put together in Cleveland that was real thin the last number of years. Marchenko obviously is kind of the highlight of that group. And, you know, you look at a player and that transition from the KHL, you know, some guys make it really smoothly. Other guys, it's a much more difficult adjustment. He's handled it even better, I think, than Columbus could have reasonably expected.
Oh, yeah. There's just so many guys in front of him, which sucks, right? Yeah. There's so many. They have Chinkanov. They've got Kent Johnson. They've got Sillinger. They've got I'm talking about younger players, right? That they're integrating their lineup. So it becomes, what do you do with that situation? But I think, you know, him dominating Cleveland for however long it may be, I think that's fine. Injuries happen. He'll be up in due time, you know, to show what he has. But I don't know if there's really harm in him staying and where he's at with Cleveland.
You make a great point. Injuries happen. I think that's so often coming out of training camp, people, if they see somebody sent down, it's kind of like the end of the world. And I always say this to people. I mean, you can never have enough depth at the AHL level. And inevitably, there's going to be an injury. There's going to be a slump. Somebody's not going to perform up to expectations. You name it. Even the best laid plans at the NHL level will go awry at some point. And that's where a guy like Marchenko will be able to step right in. And you bring him up, it's a 2-hour ride from Cleveland. It's not the old AHL where they sent you off and you forgot about you. I mean, there's Cleveland every night in Cleveland, there's Columbus management there. They go up after work a lot of times, 5 o'clock, they're in town by 7 o'clock for face-off. So, you know, you're not forgotten there. They have a really good development staff with Columbus that works on a regular basis with Cleveland. So, and I like the fact too, he's getting kind of a taste of the AHL early on. They're on a 16 road trip right now, just did a 3-3. So you're really kind of putting him through that crucible, testing him. And that's what the American League is about. Maybe more than anything, it's putting players in uncomfortable, difficult situations, seeing how they handle it, seeing how they adjust and innovate and come up with solutions to those challenges. And the ones that do are the ones that go off to the NHL and you never see them again.
Exactly. And just from a skill standpoint, we talked about how he's not going to be someone that'll be here much longer. Aside from all those little things, you know, you can tell with him when you just watch him play that he's not going to be there. The release, all those things. So you're right. When you see that kind of happen, the instinct is to say, oh, bring him up. There's no benefit there. But of course, it's a marathon, right? Not a sprint. And getting that experience is definitely going to help him down the line. And also, I think you can make the argument that playing, what, like 8 to 10 minutes, like what's that going to do from the NHL at this point? Give him those 20 minutes a night or whatever it is that he's playing in Cleveland. Let him be the guy, or maybe not the guy, right? Like, but that's not really, doesn't really how it works. But let him be a go-to option. Dominate the A. And as I said, he'll be back before you know it. But, you know, for today, that's, I think, all that we've got. Thank you for listening. And again, as I mentioned, let us know if there's any guests you want us to have on. We'll try our very best. Prospect of the Week suggestions, we're open to it. Or we'll debate with you. Who knows? But that's kind of all of it for us for this week. And, yeah, we'll see you next week.